Hi, everyone. Happy holidays. Welcome. It's episode 56 of Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for the website, former writer for Fight Magazine, Bloody Elbow, Bleacher Report, and a multitude of other sites that no longer exist. Coming to you live, somewhat live, from a undisclosed location somewhere in Seacoast, New Hampshire, but one that's not too hard to find. Hope you guys are having a great week, and we're in December. Can you believe that? This year is almost done. I'm sure for a lot of people, they're ready for it to be done. However, there's still a lot of good things. You know, everyone focuses on the negative and the Trump stuff and the blah, 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 and all this. There's a lot of good, fun stuff, and that's why we talk about MMA every single week on this show. Pro wrestling sometimes, but mostly MMA, because there's no shortage of news and things to make us smile and be amazed at and occasionally frown about. And this week is another busy news week, and it involves, of course, Conor McGregor. It involves a formation of an MMA association, a new one, but one that may have a little bit more teeth than other ones, thanks to some actual fighters that are actually being involved with it, as well as another UFC show coming up this weekend, and a show that has actually got canceled. We talk a little bit about Demetrius Johnson on the show. So who's the guest? Well, the guest is Brett Okamoto from ESPN.com. He also of the new Five Rounds podcast. I say new, but it's been around for about 20-some-odd episodes. Not as many as this podcast. He's junior to me in that sense. But, Brett, we hadn't actually had not talked since February. And, it was just time to chat. So, you know, a lot of stuff to talk about. Everything I just mentioned at the top of the show. So without further ado, let's get to Brett Okamoto of ESPN.com. So we welcome back an old friend from earlier this year, joins us back on Josh Nason's Punch-Out, and a lot of things have happened to this guy since we last talked to him. We welcome back ESPN's Brett Okamoto, who, since the last time we spoke in early February, which seems like 8 years ago at this point, he launched a podcast on the worldwide leader called Five Rounds. It's really good. Got some really good guests, really good banter. And Brett, I got to ask you, now that you're a major podcaster in this world, what have you learned and about this form of media? What are you doing good? What are you trying to get better at and all that?
I've learned that it's not easy to be a host, and I think I actually knew that going in. In my very first episode, I basically told people, like, hey, you know, bear with me here. I've never done this before. It's interesting, you know, just sitting there trying to talk to your listeners. But, you know, those are nameless, faceless people that you can't see at the time that you're recording it. You're basically feels like you're kind of talking to yourself.
Yep.
So, obviously, that's the big part to get used to. But, I've really based it, the podcast, on interviews, you know, because that's what I do anyway. I mean, that's what I've been doing for years. I enjoy talking to these guys. And MMA fighters are great. They're generous with their time. You know, they want to get their stories out for the most part, and they want to promote their fights. So it's been good, man. It's been fun. I mean, one of the biggest things as a writer is you have this great conversation with somebody, and then you try to put it into words. And I enjoy writing. I mean, that's my first passion. But you always like have that situation where you're like, man, I wish I could add this, I wish I could add that. You know, our conversation was so great, and some of the content gets lost, you know, and on the podcast, you get to hear all of it. So it's been good.
Yeah, you find these days a lot of writers are going into podcasting. It seems like everyone has one now, but a lot don't actually come back to writing, and they start doing less and less just because it seems like it's so much easier to actually just, you know, talk for an hour and kind of get through some of the thoughts in your head, as opposed to trying to sit down with, I almost said pen and paper, but basically your mind and your laptop and trying to pound something out. It's a different discipline, and it does require a lot of discipline in a different way if you want to keep the writing stuff up as well. So that'd be a interesting challenge for you in the months ahead.
Yeah, man, I like to write. I mean, that's why I got into journalism from the start. So I think I'll always write, but I will say that, you know, the great part about podcasting is you do your talk and then you're done. You know, it's over from there, you know, and when you're writing the story, you got to go back and re-listen to the interview. And I've been doing that for a good 10 years now. So the transcribing part is always the worst part, but I still enjoy the process of writing. So hopefully I don't think I'll ever lose that.
So coming, obviously a lot of big things this week are happening, as it seems that there always is in MMA, this amazingly crazy year, and this week was no different. But I want to start with the in-the-cage stuff as opposed to the out-of-the-cage first, kind of buck the trend, what a lot of people are talking about. Demetrius Johnson, you know, this is the flyweight champion. This is one of the shorter title fight builds, if you could call it that, in company history. We found out who his opponent was on Wednesday. He is fighting Tim Elliott, of course, on Saturday night in Las Vegas. Part of this this whole, you know, tough experience, the whole tournament of champions and all that stuff as well. You know, we sit here on Friday afternoon. I don't really feel much for this fight right now. And I don't know if it's just a byproduct of, you know, kind of still being in the shadow of 205, the fact there's so many events happening this month. I mean, this is, we're in a really weird spot here with this this fight this weekend.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, yes, it is an extremely short build-up to a title fight. And at the same time, it could be argued that it's a long build-up to a title fight because, you know, you have the Ultimate Fighter, but I wish that they could have, you know, figured out a way to TV schedule to announce this winner a little bit quicker, you know, so that way it just sort of could sit there and resonate with people before the fight. I mean, the way in which it was is like, you know, I think if you ask even, like, pretty dedicated MMA fans, I wonder if they even know, like, that Demetrius is fighting or who he's fighting. I think what also adds to that is that, you know, Tim didn't make it in the UFC as recently as a year ago. I mean, he went through a 3-5 losing streak and he was cut. And so you have this big, you know, reality series, which, you know, what you're trying to sell is that we found all the best flyweights in the world. We found the greatest champions from, you know, we scoured the globe and these are the best and we brought them in. And, you know, the guy who emerges is a guy who had his shot in the UFC and then cut it. So that's not to speak against Tim Elliott. I mean, when he was cut, I really thought that he would eventually get brought back. I thought he was a guy with a lot of talent, but I think that kills a little bit of the buzz when, you know, you're trying to sell this idea that you found the best flyweights in the world. And, you know, this guy's lost to Zach McCoskey. He's lost to Joseph Benavidez. He's lost to Ali Bogdanovino. So it disrupts that sell a little bit.
Yeah, it's a weird thing because, you know, we looked at this, you know, obviously this event in January got canceled and, you know, there's just not a lot of champions available and top guys, and you have one now and someone that is, he's marching towards history. You know, if he wins this fight, it'll be his ninth defense of the title. That'll tie him with GSP for second all time, one closer to Anderson Silva's record of 10. And I think unless, you know, something bizarre happens in the flyweight division, I think he's going to get that. It's just interesting that out of all this, you know, the lack of champions, lack of stars available, they have this one. And I feel for him in a lot of ways. I mean, granted that people have talked about, you know, time and time again about him not being a draw and not the interest level not being there and people walking out in fights and all this type of stuff. And meanwhile, he's just going out there and winning. But I feel bad for him in this case, and be interesting to see kind of where he goes after this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the narrative on Demetrius for a while now, is that, you know, I don't know if, yeah, I mean, I guess you can put it into those words. You feel bad for the guy. I mean, he deserves more attention than he gets. I mean, I'll never forget, you know, the fight was in Vancouver. I forget exactly who he was fighting. It was whoever he submitted in like the final second of the last round, right? He armbarred. Horiguchi.
Horiguchi. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and the entire crowd in Vancouver was getting up and leaving. I mean, the aisles were packed with people who were getting up and leaving in the fifth round of that fight. And it's a combination of, I don't think people really understand what they're watching when they look at Demetrius. He's so good that his fights aren't competitive, and so that leads to very little drama, and in that way, very little entertainment for the people who are watching the fight, the vast majority of the people who are watching the fight. And then, you know, the UFC notices that, and so they don't get behind him in a promotional way. So it's just, you know, all of these add together to, you know, create the situation where you have, in my opinion, the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world, and he just doesn't get a lot of attention.
Yeah. So here's my hope. My hope is he wins this weekend. You know, he goes on, breaks the record in 2017, maybe does it next summer as part of the UFC's big International Fight Week show, something that's, he doesn't have to carry the show, but he's going for that title or going for that record on that show in a co-main event spot or something like that. Or again, he doesn't have to carry the load, but there's a historical element attached to it. And then from there, he moves up to bantamweight. He decides to just vacate the title and say, I've done everything I can here, which at that point, it's hard to imagine that he hasn't cleaned out the division completely, in some cases twice over. He moves up to 135. There's way more interesting fights. There's names there, better competition. We hopefully get to see him challenged a little bit more. That would be my hope for him going forward, is that he completes his journey at flyweight and then says, let's go back to 135 and let's do it again. What do you think of that? Do you want to see him stay at flyweight for as long as he can, or would you like to see him go up and potentially get some different challenges along the way?
Yeah, of course, the fan in me wants to see him move up and challenge himself in that way, because, you know, if he wins this weekend, as, you know, a lot of us expect him to, and excuse me, and then, you know, I mean, his next challenge is obviously going to be the winner of the Cejudo and the Benavidez fight. I know he's beaten both of those guys, but those guys are looked as you know, at least, you know, the closest thing to legitimate challenges that he's going to get. Of course, I want to see the guy challenged. I mean, that's what athletics in general is all about. I mean, Demetrius says it himself, though. If he's not getting paid more to move up, then why put himself at risk? And you can talk about, like, legacy, and you can talk about, you know, by doing so, then maybe he would get more publicity, and in turn, that would turn into more money. But I've always thought that he's had a pretty level-headed look at it, and that is, like, I'm going to go for the record, because that's history, and that's my division, and this is my title, so obviously that's what I'm going to go for. I'm going to defend this title 10, 11 times, break Anderson Silva's record. And then if they want me to move up to bantamweight, I am absolutely fine doing so, but I'm going to demand more money for it. You know, the analogy that he used, I think when I was talking to him a year ago about it, is that, you know, if you're a guy who cleans fish tanks and you're cleaning out the tanks where all the guppies are, and they're like, all right, you're doing a great job, we want you to go clean the shark tank, and we're going to pay you the exact same amount. He's like, I'm not putting my hand in a shark tank. And I thought that was actually a pretty good analogy that describes sort of what's going on in his mind. If he's going to go up to the bantamweight and take on more risk, then he wants the bigger paychecks with it.
Interesting stuff. I would hope that he would, but again, we'll talk about union stuff and pay and all these type of things. I look at this flight division and I'm comparing it to bantamweight in terms of how long it took for the division to really kind of gel with basically a top 10, top 8, like solid guys and contenders and interesting stories. It took 2 or 3 years to really kind of come together in that way. And flyweight, for whatever reason, and I don't know if it's because, you know, he's been so dominant or just, I haven't got a chance to really kind of put my finger on it, is why hasn't flyweight been able to come together with a very interesting group of talents like, say, a bantamweight has, over the past couple of years? Why do you think that is?
I mean, I think you're getting to like the smaller end of the spectrum in terms of guys who can make that weight. I mean, just by, I think, you know, just looking at human race and how many people can make 135 compared to how many people can make 125, you're probably just going to have more available talent at 135. And there is some hope for the flyweight division. It's just a lot of these guys are very young. You know, I mean, Ray Borg is very young. Sergio Pettis is very young. You know, Justin Scoggins, he's not going to make that weight anymore, but he was very young. So I think it's a combination of Demetrius being very dominant, obviously, and, and just sometimes that's just the way it is. Like, you go through hot and cold streaks, these divisions do in this sport. Right now, bantamweight's on a hot streak, but like you said, it took a little bit for it to get there. I think flyweight will have its day, but you're right. It's just not really necessarily a very compelling division, beyond its champion.
So we have, speaking of flyweight, we have, obviously you mentioned the Cejudo Benavidez fight, the co-main event coming up this Saturday. This kicks off a month of 5 UFC events, if anyone can believe that. And there is some interesting, even with kind of the talent being spread out a lot with these cards, there is some interesting fights on this show. The Benavidez Cejudo fight is interesting. If I can pull up here, Sarah McMahon comes back to fight against Alexis Davis. It's kind of one of those women's bantamweight, you know, names that have been beat by Rousey type of deal. What else do we have in the show? Jake Ellenberger against Jorge Masvidal. And on the prelims, we also have Gray Maynard against Ryan Hall, a former tough winner, past tough winner, who hasn't fought in almost a year or just at a year. Rob Font on the show. I mean, what, when you look through the rest of this card, what stands out to you as the most interesting?
Yeah, I mean, I think, it seems like, you know, this is always the case when you're talking about the UFC cards, because regardless of how good the prelims are, you know, it tends to always be about the main event. And I don't know if that's just like a human nature to, you know, be drawn to like the last thing of the night. Obviously, that's where you're going to put, you know, your best foot forward, because that's why it's the main event. But, you know, the UFC is putting on so many cards that it just seems like, yeah, of course, sometimes you get strong prelims, but it's usually all about the main event. And that's how I look at it in this one. I mean, you have the main and the co-main. It's sorting out the very top of the flyweight division. It's trying to find Demetrius Johnson a challenge. And, you know, they found one in Tim Elliott through a reality show, and then, you know, they're trying to find one through two guys who he's already beaten before, and Benavidez and Cejudo. That's where most of my interest is, of course. You know, Jake Ellenberger is a guy who just looks like he completely fell off the map and was just mentally didn't even know what kind of fighter he was anymore. And he looks like he's maybe turned that around a little bit. You know, he's really embracing that aggressive style of Rafael Cordero. You know, Masvidal, of course, is always a fun fighter to watch. To me, this is all Masvidal. That's just kind of how I'm expecting this fight to go. But yeah. Ellenberger, you know, has really turned the corner. And is, you know, his old self, but like even a better version of himself. If he really has like reignited his passion for this sport, you know, that fight could surprise us. Gray, I love Gray. I mean, I was just seeing him on the scale today at the weigh-in, you know, back in the Palms where there's a lot of history there. You know, a Las Vegas guy. He's always lived in Las Vegas throughout his fighting career, you know, minus the little break where he took up in the American Kickboxing Academy. He's a guy that I root for, man. I mean, he's part of one of my favorite fights of all time. He and Frankie Edgar's fight at 125 is maybe my number one fight, my favorite fight of all time. But I just don't. He's another guy where you just don't know. You're hanging on, or are you still really truly motivated? How much fire do you got? I think, you know, Ryan Hall should have a good opportunity to beat him. While I agree with you that this is relatively strong for a prelim, you know, most of my focus is on the top two fights.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Gray Maynard, and I watch him in these. The reason I'm interested in what happens with him now is I'm worried about him. You know, I just wonder where he's going to be in like 10, 15 years. Just the physical toll that it's taken. I mean, that goes with a lot of guys, but you mentioned Frankie Edgar, especially someone like that. You tend to think about just, you know, that string that Maynard went on, just losing time after time, getting knocked out and knocked out and knocked out, where it's like, what are we doing here? You know, and you just, you worry about these type of things. This is what they signed up for. But with Gray, I mean, he finally won. He won his last fight. He was making his featherweight debut. And yeah, I just, in watching him, I Ryan Hall, not exactly known for, you know, hard hands or anything like that. Known as more of a submission guy. So maybe they're kind of trying to do right by Gray in that, not giving him these knockout artists and giving him more submission fighters and kind of seeing where he's at. But yeah, I worry about his well-being, but I guess against a more of a submission style fighter, maybe that's not much of a concern.
Yeah, maybe. And I think, you know, you're probably onto something that they are looking out for him a little bit. I mean, I remember talking to Gray before his featherweight debut, and he told me that Dana White told him, that's it. I mean, I think you're good. You know, you've had a good career. You've been in some very, very, very memorable fights. Again, you know, I think Dana oftentimes has a soft spot in his heart for these Vegas guys, you know, because he's a Vegas guy himself. And I remember, you know, Gray basically telling me to really talk Dana into giving him another fight. And, you know, you mentioned him moving from 155 to 145. Like, this is a guy who we used to say, like, maybe 155 was difficult for him. You know, he was a guy who we hit the weights, and he was always he carried a lot of muscle on his frame. But now he's depleting himself to get to 145. He doesn't look, you know, like himself at this weight class when he steps up on that scale. So, I mean, you put it into good words. You're more, you know, worried about Gray at this point than, you know, you are really intrigued by where he's going to go in this 145-pound division. So it's always kind of surreal when you get to that point in the guy's career.
So that's a segue into, you know, worrying about fighters, and that's something that this this new MMA, not a union, an association, announced this week on it was Wednesday afternoon in a press conference that might still be going on, for all I know, lasting 2 hours. Wow. A lot to unpack there, and there's been a lot of discussion about some things, but, you know, I listened to the audio again today, and I kind of just took notes of, like, stuff that stood out and other sentiments I've heard and all this. The one thing that really is standing out to me is that people don't get, and I don't get, how did Bjorn Rebny get involved in this whole thing? The last time we heard from Bjorn, he was somewhere on a beach in Mexico, right? After this whole Bellator thing and Scott Coker and all this stuff 2 years ago, he somehow just comes out in this form alongside these former UFC champions, these top stars of the sport, and you know, basically pushing the UFC's buttons and saying some pretty nasty things about him, and kind of just saying, here's what we're going for. We're kind of going to go for this, not a union, but an association. That was one of the most bizarre things of this whole thing to me, and something I'm still thinking about. As you watch that whole press conference play out, what stood out to you is, did anything stand out to you? And if so, what was it?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall what stood out to me is the same stuff that stood out to a lot of people, and that is, A, this is big, just simply due to the fact that these fighters are out publicly and saying what they're saying. You know, they're attaching their names to it. This isn't an off-the-record conversation being done on a phone, you know, or in the back room of a, you know, UFC gym or event somewhere. I mean, this is a press conference that these guys want to get this word out, and they're very strongly attaching their names to it. So it's significant in that way. What is Bjorn Rebny doing here? I mean, that's, again, of course, something that stood out to me and a lot of other people. I mean, in his position as a former promoter, the stories that you hear about him, the fact that a lot of the fighters have heard those stories or were involved in those stories and have not forgotten that, because it was really not that long ago. Are you taking an already pretty difficult task of getting 500 UFC rostered fighters to unite? Are you making it more difficult right from the bat by putting a polarizing figure like Bjorn on this board? And three, you know, all the questions that were left unanswered. What is your strategy here? How are you going to get the UFC to sit down and recognize you and negotiate with you to get the things that you want? Where's the money coming from? Who's funding this, and why are they funding it? A lot of big questions left unanswered. And you can respect, you know, Bjorn's explanation that, you know, we're not going to sit here and lay out all of our plans just so that, you know, the UFC can know how to can strategize against us. I mean, that does make sense in a way. But at the same time, I mean, you need numbers. You need to get fighters on board with you. And I understand that you're going to have those conversations privately, but in a public setting, on your big splash announcement, you should have given fighters, I think, and the public, a little bit better of an idea of exactly how you're going to try and accomplish all this.
Yeah, and one of the things that you had actually mentioned on the Five Rounds podcast, this was before the announcement was made, and you and Brian were talking about this, is obviously the involvement of CAA, WMEIMG's big rival. And, you know, Bjorn kind of tried to, you know, push that off to the side, or basically say that they weren't powering this whole thing. But it's there's just the bullshit meter kind of goes off. It's like, look, these guys are represented for the most part, other than Cerrone. I believe they're all represented by CAA. It just seems too coincidental that this group would be all CA clients that just happen to be, you know, going for this against this other, you know, essentially this other agency's product or this agency's company. That's kind of another strange thing to it. Ultimately, if that helps it move forward because they have money and because they have intentions behind it, that could be good. But that was one of the things that I just, you know, I it's hard to get me to convince me that CAA is really not masterminding this thing from the back.
You know, I believe that mixed martial artists need a union. I am probably more in favor of a union than, you know, necessarily an association. And maybe that's just because my
my level of intelligence when it comes to labor laws and, you know, how it works is just, I'm not an expert on it, you know, but when I hear that both sides laid out, you know, it seems to me like the UFC is essentially a league and that a union would be more effective than an association. But either way, I do believe that, you know, fighters do need to collectively come together in order to improve their working situation. I'm 100% believe that. I don't think anybody could really objectively look at this sport and disagree with that. When that happens, whatever group that is, it has to have one goal, and that's it. And that's fighters' rights. I mean, that has to be their only goal. And, you know, you hear this concern from fighters is that, okay, the UFC just sold for $4 billion. People are going to see that. They're going to want to get involved. We need it. We need the help. We need, you know, something good to happen to get us all together. But you do. You just question the motives and the intentions of everybody who's now trying to jump in. And if this, you know, whatever relationship CAA has to this, it's, you know, maybe it doesn't matter because, you know, either way, if it's benefiting the fighters, I guess it's a good thing. But at the end of the day, it really does matter because you can only have one goal here, again, and that is to improve the situation for the fighters. You can't have any ulterior motives. And so, you know, the fact that four of the five guys are represented by CAA, it does make you question, of course.
Mm-hmm. Two other thoughts from this. I wonder if GSP is fighting on this Toronto show, making his big comeback. I wonder if he's standing up there doing the same thing, or if that completely changed. If that whole conversation and that negotiation of trying to get back and trying to get what he, the money, the Under Armour thing, all that stuff, if that had come through, would he still be a part of this group? What do you think?
Yeah, it's a great question. My guess is not at this time, but maybe eventually. I would probably say that you would want to think that, you know, this is something that's close to George's heart, but obviously his failed negotiations with WME, you know, and getting on that Toronto card obviously played part in it, but it goes beyond that. You know, this is something that he believes in, you know, individually of himself. So I would say probably not going to have that press conference this week, but if George is fighting in Toronto, but I'd like to think that it would have happened eventually.
Mm. One other thing, with any union or association, and I agree, and I think anyone that covers a sport, follows a sport, knows that if you follow other sports, you know that there are these unions exist for a reason. Sometimes they're painted as bad things because of lockouts and you know, strikes and all this type of stuff. Because fans, at the end of the day, you know, it's kind of like going to the movies and seeing when you see ads, right? You're looking to try to remove yourself from reality. You go to the movies and you see this stuff, and it's kind of like it brings you back. And I think sometimes what happens is with labor strikes in pro sports and labor issues, it reminds people of like their jobs and reminds people of just all the BS that kind of comes along with that stuff. And they want to watch a game. They want to cheer for their team. They want to do whatever. They don't have to worry about this stuff. But I think everyone's behind this, and they realize that these guys and girls, they need more protections. They need all this. They need this stuff. I mean, the fact that they don't get residuals from video games is just, that's absurd in 2016. The one thing that no one is really talking about with any of this stuff, though, is that there is a large contingent of fighters that don't speak English, or English is not their first language, in Asia, in Russia, in Brazil. You have all these other countries where they are going to have to go, and we always think of this almost as like American-based, like American unions, all this stuff. They're going to have to somehow convince all these nationalities, all these guys from these different backgrounds that they may not be that familiar with labor unions and how these things work and just cultural differences. And that keeps running through my head is what is the plan going to be to try to convince people from completely different cultures, working cultures, to join this group and potentially go against the UFC? And you don't see that with some of these other, you know, unions. What we think about unions, because everyone's playing for the most part in the States or Canada, but it's a little bit different with fighters. That's something that keeps going through my head, is I don't know how they're going to get past that.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, creates a unique and interesting challenge that, like you mentioned, other sports don't necessarily feel, or at least feel as much, of course, as this one. I mean, I don't think that it necessarily makes it impossible. I mean, it's not impossible, but you know, I mean, it takes extra time, it takes extra money, and we all, again, we know that how difficult of a task it's going to be anyway. So, I don't know if I have an answer for you to make you feel better about that, Josh. I mean, it definitely makes it more challenging, but in a lot of ways, as big as the sport is and as big as the world is, sometimes it can also be small as well, you know, and I think that, you know, international fighters, even though there are cultural differences that you would have to navigate through, what we're talking about here are things that are beneficial, you know, to yourself as an independent contractor of the UFC. So, again, I don't think it's a deal breaker, but it certainly does make the process more difficult.
We'll round the bend with as we always do. There can't be an audio show podcast without talking about Conor McGregor. And this week, obviously saw you on ESPN talking about the big news that Conor McGregor has requested and filed for and got his boxing license in California. And it is it's kind of a big deal, obviously, that for whatever reason, the Mayweather talk never seemed to go away, as ridiculous as it was for those of us that understood that he simply just couldn't go fight Mayweather. And just, you know, the way that I think everyone kind of understands why, for some reason, mainstream media picks up on that stuff the way that they do. But he decided to go, a few days after being stripped of the featherweight title, decides to go get his boxing license, maybe looking to get licensed in other states. And there's a lot of questions about why. Ali Act stuff has been brought up. The Mayweather fight, obviously, has been brought up. And a lot more questions, as always. And the press is on Conor McGregor. What's when you heard the news and got the story, what was your sense of sense? Is this just general posturing? Do you think there's really something to this and potentially a Mayweather fight? I mean, what are you thinking?
I mean, Conor doesn't like anybody to know what he's necessarily doing until he does it, you know? And I think that applies to here. So you're left speculating in some ways, you know, because at the end of the day, you can be 99% sure of what something is, but until it's proved to be that, then it's not that, you know? I mean, this obviously looks, I think most people would agree, it looks like posturing, right? I mean, it comes just shortly after the belt is taken away from him unceremoniously on a UFC broadcast, and he's not involved in that. You know, there's no press conference, there's no... if you were listening to the Five Rounds podcast, you heard me speak about this. I mean, that could have been a big event. That could have been something on Fight Pass. That could have been, you know, the two belts sitting in front of him. He says which one he's vacating. You know, he would have done it in his own Conor way. He says, I'm giving this title back to the featherweight division. I will not, terrorize the division anymore. You can have your division back. I give it back to you. I mean, that would be great drama, and it'd be a great way to just build Conor back up even more. Or not back up, just to continue to build up and hype up what he is. Instead, the UFC just quickly announced it, you know, seemingly in some ways just to make this interim title between Max Holloway and Anthony Pettis. So that happens, and now he comes out and makes this move where he's getting a boxing license. It looks like, you know, two sides flexing muscles back and forth at each other, Conor and the UFC, which we've seen before. At the same time, like you said, It offers him certain rights as a professional boxer under the Ali Act. It's symbolic in a way, but it's also a real thing. He now has a professional boxing license. He could try to sign with a boxing match, and obviously the UFC would then do legally what it had to do in order to stop him. It creates leverage, but it also, I think, just creates a little bit of a shadow of a doubt of how crazy is this guy. Does he really want to go to war with the UFC and challenge certain aspects of his contract? And we all think probably not, but you don't know for sure, right? And if you're the UFC, that creates a real big problem, you know, and it creates something that you need to respond to, I think, and we'll see how they respond to it.
I'd be interested to hear them respond to anything, you know, have a press conference, have anything with these new owners, or I'm sure you and other people obviously have put in interview requests and just it's been radio silence. And to hear recently that, you know, they still have yet to meet with Conor, the new owners. That is just amazing to me. Your money draw, you're the biggest star in the sport, arguably. Guy that is just can be in that conversation for fighting Mayweather and getting mainstream attention. The McMahon strut, the McGregor strut, got from Vince McMahon. Now all these pro athletes are doing it. Football players to see us all in NFL games. He's the man, and he's backed up almost everything he's ever said. And the new owners haven't met with him. That stuff just blows my mind. Is that this has been like a great book is going to be written about this whole McGregor UFC thing at some point, someday when it's all said and done, because just the posturing between the two, and they've never dealt with a star of this magnitude before. And they're just kind of having to go with it because he is their biggest star. He's their biggest draw. It's so fascinating. This week has been no less fascinating because of all this news.
Well, and what makes it so much more fascinating is that McGregor's rise, and I think, you know, I don't want to say that he's hit his peak because we don't know where he's going from here, but, I mean, this was sort of kind of looked at as this was the top of the mountain. You know, Jose Aldo was certainly the top of the mountain at one point, but then once that started to become a reality and you know, he was winning all those fights and, okay, he's going to get his shot, and then, of course, when he won, immediately the first thing that a lot of people thought about, obviously, you know, in addition to potentially a rematch, but it was the lightweight title, you know, because he was a big featherweight. You knew he could make 555 pounds, and that was the very logical place to go. After this, you know, is he really going to go challenge 170 and fight Tyron Woodley? I mean, I wouldn't count him out in that fight, but I think he's in a position now where he's at. It's maybe the peak. It's maybe the peak of where he's at. I mean, winning two titles in New York at Madison Square Garden, it's going to be hard to really go above that. Again, I'm not saying that he can't, but he's at a very top spot. And it's just interesting that moment has coincided with the departure of Lorenzo Fertitta, because mm-hmm. Lorenzo Fertitta was always the guy who could make sense of everything, who could calm everybody's nerves. He was, you know, the yin to Dana White's yang, or the yang to the yin. I'm not sure which one is which in that analogy, but he was the level-headed businessman to make these decisions, you know. And with him gone, and now these unknowns of WME, IMG, and Dana running it all, who runs with a lot of passion and emotion, it really adds a stick of dynamite to it. Lorenzo Fertitta is no longer involved.
I agree. I think that's a great story. I think it's going to be profiled at some point too. One last question about Mayweather McGregor, and then we'll call it good. If that fight happens, proper build, press conferences, Vegas atmosphere, all that stuff, does it have a shot of beating Mayweather Pacquiao in terms of pay-per-view buys, 4.6 million?
Yeah, I believe it does.
I think it does too.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. You always feel like you're crazy when you say something like that, because we know how difficult it is to sell that amount of pay-per-view. It's insane. It's unheard of, really. But you got an MMA star fighting a boxing star. The world would be interested in that. I think it would be Pacquiao Mayweather.
Yeah, I think it would too. I just think of the press conferences and that, you know, with Pacquiao, he just really didn't. It's almost like he kind of needed the ancillary parts to do that. The promoters. The Freddie Roaches of the world, all that. It's almost like they were kind of doing a lot of the talking, plus Mayweather, and Pacquiao just kind of is what he is. I'm just thinking of Mayweather and McGregor on the microphone going head to head, and how they could build that. If they did, you know, if HBO was the one to have it, or if it was Showtime, they do the specials and all that stuff. I think they could do it in a way that there'd be a lot of people obviously would say McGregor's never boxed before. How is he going to do this? But so what? So many people would just be like, I don't care. I just need to see this.
I'll still watch it.
Yeah. I'll still watch it. I think it could. And that would be, my God, can you imagine that? I mean, that would be amazing. Absolutely amazing stuff. What a guy this McGregor is. How did he just come into our lives like this? This is so great.
It is great. It really is great. I get accused of being, you know, a quote unquote fan of McGregor, but it's not really that. It's like, this guy's fun. I mean, as a journalist, who covers the sport without bias, I can still say that. That's fact. I mean, this guy's interesting. You know, he makes things fun. And I don't think he's ever going to fight Mayweather, but look how much fun it is. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but just you and I just talking about a fantasy fight between him. I mean, I get sick of it. I truly do. But I think that, it's a little bit more interesting now, you know, now that he has reached, you know, a place in his own sport where he's got so much leverage. And, you know, the idea of how much money he could make in just one fight against Floyd Mayweather, it makes it slightly more, tolerable to me to talk about it, you know, as it was, you know, in the past when you just, it obviously seemed like they were just saying one thing in like a headline and then it would blow up. And it's like, that's not fun at all, you know. But now it's like, if Conor really does get so angry and so fed up with, you know, his pay, his lack of respect that he feels he's getting, maybe, you know, his inability to get to a negotiating table that he feels he deserves to sit at. Who knows, man? I mean, maybe he uses his boxing license, and maybe it's not against Floyd Mayweather. It doesn't have to be against Floyd Mayweather. It's just a threat of him in a boxing match. That still would sell very well. He'd still make a lot of money. So I guess it's just, it's more tolerable for me to talk about it now than it was, you know, 6-7 months ago, a year ago, whatever it was when this thing first surfaced.
Yep, I agree. Real quick, UFC last week this past week, decided to postpone a pay-per-view event in January in Anaheim, moving it to August. I had noted this a while ago that I was a little concerned about the schedule coming up in January, February, because a lot of main events, a lot of lack of fights on these cards had not been announced. I've seen nothing yet, really, for the Fox show in Denver. I mean, no, it's an unfortunate case when they have to move stuff, but they were a little bit aggressive, I think, with the schedule December, January. Any big surprise they had to move that show?
No, it wasn't a big surprise for me. And you know, everybody wants to on this, and some people want to jump off a cliff about it and make it into a bigger deal. I don't think it's necessarily a massive, massive deal that, okay, they had to reschedule a pay-per-view. They had to move it, you know, that card in the same venue to August. I'm not concerned from a standpoint of this as a singular example of this happening. However, like, it is kind of, you do wonder, and I'm going to go back to the departure of Lorenzo Fertitta. Like, this is a transitional period for the UFC still. Yeah. And you've got Dana who's really trying to do a lot of it, I believe, himself. And he's entering a situation where it's actually more difficult to do it because fighters are asking for more and they are holding out and they are, you know, they're not just willing to fight for whatever their contract says it is. So you're actually taking a process and making it a little more difficult. You're removing one of the guys who used to do it, and you're actually also removing Joe Silva, the longtime UFC matchmaker who handled a lot of this. So, you know, it's not easy for the UFC to put together a crazy busy schedule like we know that they have enjoyed doing and still intend to do. So that's what's interesting to me, is not that they had to cancel one pay-per-view event, it's that this issue keep popping up. You know, even with 205, we saw that the main event wasn't done until the day before the press conference. So how reoccurring is this going to be?
I would agree. And we'll talk about that more throughout 2017 and beyond. So Brett Okamoto, big thanks for stopping by. And before you go, obviously a professional podcaster, will give you a chance to plug where people can hear you as well as read you. Go ahead. Floor is yours.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. It's the Five Rounds podcast. It's myself, and now it's a co-host as well, Brian Campbell. I've worked with Brian for a long time. He's mostly remained behind the scenes, but he knows the sport extremely well. He's in Bristol, so you know he can get in the studio and coordinate things with us. And we have a great banter back and forth, talking about this sport that always gives us great topics to talk about, and then trying to bring you guys the best guests that we can every week. You can find it on the ESPN app. Just download the ESPN app and subscribe to it on there, or it's also on iTunes. It's the number five, IBE, Five Rounds, and it comes out every week.
And you can also follow Brett on Twitter, BOkamoto ESPN. Follow him. He shares the links and all the good stuff. So, Brett, have a great holiday season, and thanks again, once again, for joining Josh Nason's Punch Out.
Yeah, you too, Josh. Have a good Christmas.
All right, hope you guys enjoyed that. I'm sure you did if you're into MMA talk. Again, you can follow Brett on Twitter. And check out the Five Rounds podcast. It is crazy how many people have podcasts now. And you tend to think like, okay, how many more can we take, right? As you're listening to one right now. So thank you guys for listening to this week after week, because I know you have a growing number of choices. And, you know, thanks for choosing to listen in. But definitely check out Brett's show. Does a lot of interviews. Again, he mentioned Brian Campbell's as co-host. He have the WWE coverage. I know him for that a lot on ESPN.com, something that I am hoping to write about at some point this month. And just going to get some time. As we talked about on the podcast, is that, you know, sometimes it's easier to just talk than write. But, you know, we'll write about the whole ESPN thing and all that, kind of looking back at the year that was 2016. But we still have a solid month to go. Let's see, two Bellator shows tonight being Friday. Or sorry, Bellator show tonight and then one tomorrow night. For whatever reason, they're doing these two shows. I don't know why. I don't know if it's simply to kind of run out some of the contracts they have with Windstar Casino in Thackerville, Oklahoma, I think it is. I just don't get it. These shows are kind of thin. They just had the Henderson, Chandler fight a few weeks ago. And I was talking to Paul Fontaine about this on Twitter, who he's heard my laments about, Bellator scheduling. I think when you're a promotion like that, you try to make the most out of your TV time possible, right? It's not really a wild concept. It's just, to me, it's just common sense for today's media consumer. With there's so much more content now than ever before with movies and TV and all this stuff. And you got to make it matter, right? No matter what. And for whatever reason, Bellator they put guys like, you know, Linton Vassell and who did he fight in that? Francis Carmon. In that opening fight of that Henderson Chandler show, and we knew what it was going to be 15 minutes of just a very boring fight, and that's how they open up the show. And you have these other shows, which you have these really spectacular finishes with new upcoming fighters, up and coming fighters, established guys, and a lot more excitement. To me, they need to go to a once a month format. None of this like multiple shows and in back to back weekends or anything like that. Once a month. Load up a nice four-fight, two-hour show, get in, get out, and make your impact that way. Kind of like, you know, those old WEC shows that you really used to look forward to, Strikeforce to an extent, and just maybe you can do five-fight shows. Whatever it is, make it matter. Make every fight matter towards your organization. There's just too much flotsam and jetsam when it comes to MMA on TV, and there's people just like, oh, let's just throw this up and let's watch this, and it's not good, you know, and you have some of these really boring fights. You have fights with no stakes and guys that just disappear. Enough of that. Let's give every fight matter. And you do that, maybe you can actually start building out some of these prelim fights as well. Prelim fights for Bellator right now are just local guys and the occasional prospect on the way up. But it's just make these shows matter again. I mean, I think that's the big thing. And they matter to an extent, but just less is more, and I think we're going to get to that point with a lot of things. UFC, we talked about, mentioned in this show, they have to cancel this show in Anaheim. I knew this a week ago. I was looking ahead at the schedule. I'm like, how they have no fights on these shows. How are they going to fill these? That Fox show has no main card yet, and that's in coming up in like a little over a month, 2 months, and that's in Denver, Colorado on Big Fox. Can you imagine that if – you know, if the NFL or any of these other contracts they had said, what are we going to put in this slot here? We have a game coming up. We have no idea where the teams are going to be. We have no general concept. Like, we know there's going to be UFC there, but we have no idea who's going to be the attraction. You know, you got to start the promotion and build. And I was kind of looking at last year because they did a similar schedule, and these fights were announced months ago. Relatively, if you go a year ago, they were like months in advance. So I don't know. And again, it could be part of the transition, but I think no matter the transition, you should be able to look at a calendar and look at how many shows you have going on in November, December, and then January, and then February, and figure who do we have available to fight, especially in a quick turnaround in some of these cases. And I'm used to these kind of 3 month builds to shows and meet the main event. As of right now, we have nothing. So it is, I don't know. We'll see when we get there. But the fact they've had to move one show already, and BJ Penn against Yair Rodriguez is probably going to be a slaughter for Rodriguez, and no main event for the Fox show. Still don't know what's going on for February, and kind of weird stuff. So Bellator covered by Paul Fontaine of this site. We will he'll be doing kind of a wrap up of the weekend coming on Sunday. Ryan Frederick is covering UFC. the tough finale. I don't know if he's actually there or not. Sometimes he goes to these shows. He might be there. He's doing the coverage on Saturday night. We have TLC for WWE fans. TLC coming on Sunday. Steve Kahn is going to be doing that for us. And ROH coming up tonight. Chris Akin is actually covering this as well. So it's a little bit of a Dave-free weekend when it comes to the written word. But you can read the Wrestling Observer Awards issue from a few days ago. That a lot of Dave words. He'll be obviously doing the audio shows and so on and so forth. And one quick shout out, and I don't want to come off as too much of a shill, and I'll let you guys go after this. I really enjoyed the Billy Corgan interview that Dave and Brian did on Wednesday or Thursday. I think it was Wednesday. And he was obviously doing some media and so on. He'd done a couple shows, and I'd actually tweeted at him because I didn't know if he was still considering us or not. Thankfully, he was, and it was a good 45-minute show. You can find that on the site. It was really entertaining. And someone actually, at complete aside, Smashing Pumpkins was, growing up in the 90s, it was one of my favorite bands. It is one of my favorite bands ever. It's kind of fallen off the way for me a little bit, but just some of those great albums they had. And that's why the Billy Corgan wrestling thing has been so weird for me to kind of follow along with. But I thought he was really insightful. He came off as truthful. And a lot of people, even though they kind of discount TNA, they're still interested in hearing what the hell is going on with the organization. And I thought he shed a lot of light on that. So I definitely think if you had not heard that yet, go out of your way to listen to that. It's a good 45-minute show. And it'd be fun to have him on again with those two guys. And who knows? Maybe he could be on this show at some point in 2017. You never know. With all that said, again, thank you guys for making your choice and stopping by. Thanks to Brett Okamoto. Read his stuff. Subscribe to his podcast. All that good stuff as well. Support him and support our site. Continue to support our site. Thank you very much. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.